Okay. Welcome to the Substance of Life podcast. Today you are in for a treat. We have with us an entrepreneur who is a home builder's contractor. Her name is Esther Johnson, and she is from the lovely state of Texas. So as always, I ask that you sit back, relax, get a pencil and pen, and be prepared to be inspired and learn. Esther, thank you for joining us this morning. Welcome to the show. Welcome. I have so many questions, but I'm going to start out by asking that question that has been piercing a lot of people's minds that I've been telling, hey, I'm going to have a contractor on. Tell us about what inspired you to go into the field, and give us a little bit of a definition of what it is that you do.
So, Angela, what really inspired me, I didn't really at the time know I was being inspired. It kind of happened over a long period of time. Tony and I had been, Tony is my husband, and we have been talking for years about our dream home. So I began collecting little mini floor plans. And literally over about a 10 to 15 year span, I was collecting these. And whenever we were in, for instance, Dallas or Houston mostly, if we saw an open house sign, I would say, hey, Tony, do we have time to go in there? And we would go inside the open house. And generally, there wasn't anyone sitting with the home. They just leave a little flyer on the bar with the layout of the house and the cost of the house. And I would grab those too. So fast forward 10 to 15 years, I've been collecting all these plans, thinking about what my dream home is going to look like. And we decided we were ready to build our dream home. So we co-built our dream home. And what that means is that there was a contractor, which in the state of Texas, I'm not sure about the other states, is required that you can't contract your own home. Now I think maybe some rules have changed with that. But at the time, we couldn't contract our own home. And so we were with a contractor, and the agreement was that if we wanted to use some subs that we had found, that we would do so. If we wanted to use his subs, they would be available to us. And as this process is happening and the home is being built, Tony was working. I had a home-based building, a business. I had another business, which was screen printing. And so I would go to the job site. And as always, a subcontractor would have a question, which I didn't know the answer to. So I would call Tony and say, hey, this is what they're asking me. What do I tell them? And so as this went on, I was learning about the building project. And so fast forward now, we decided that we were going to invest with the contractor that had co-built our home. And what that meant was that we would finance the project. He would build the project and oversee it. And then at the end of the project, when we sold the home, we would split the profit. And so once we thought about this, and then I said, well, hey, Tony, if we're going to invest this much money in someone, why don't we invest it in me? And so that's kind of how I got started. It wasn't easy getting started, but that was kind of what catapulted me to get started.
So you invested in your own home? You decided, okay, well, I'm going to finance it myself and then split the profit. So you sold your home to yourself?
So not our home, our personal home, but we were going to finance another home, which is called a spec home, which is a home that you build and you speculate that you're going to sell it. And so that's what we were going to do with this builder. And then, as I said, I suggested, hey, why don't we invest in me? And that's, as I said, that's kind of what got me started.
Okay. So I'm getting the vision. Your creative juices were going. You were looking at some homes that were previously
Angela,
built.
I'm sorry. I didn't hear what you said.
I said you were looking at some homes that were previously built and looking at different floor plans. And from those floor plans...
You Angela, decided, I'm sorry.
Is it coming through?
It's coming through now. It wasn't at first.
Okay. As I was saying... You started out by collecting different floor plans and looking at...
I'm sorry, it didn't come through.
It didn't come through again? Okay, how about now? Is that better?
Now it is.
Okay. So you were in the process of collecting floor plans and looking at different homes and how they were designed and what they look like. And then you decided, hey, why not invest in me and... You kind of shifted the dynamics of all of that. So I'm seeing you visually, you know, touring Texas and getting different builders' plans. How was that first project? How did that first project come about? I mean, you said you teamed up with a builder, but how did you maneuver that landscape?
So actually, we didn't team up with another builder. That was what we originally planned to do. But then when I said, Tony, let's invest in me and I would be the builder. And so we began, first of all, to find a floor plan designer. So we knew we were going to build in this new neighborhood. And the minimum square footage at the time was 1,600 square feet, heated and cooled. And so we also decided that while three bedrooms at that time were kind of the norm, that we would go with the four bedroom. And I must tell you this, it was very, very challenging for me to receive the financial backing that I needed. Keep in mind, this was around 06 as we were going into 07. And the housing market was definitely going south fast in many areas. So I went to several different lenders who said that because I was a new builder and because of the housing market where it seemed to be heading, that they didn't feel comfortable investing in me. So I literally went to several different lenders before I found one that said, okay, I'll finance your project.
I'm looking at this, Esther, I'm looking at this and I'm seeing you... I mean, first of all, that's a challenge. You have to fill out the paperwork. You've got to make sure you've got all the requirements lined up. You have to show them that what you have employees. How, I guess my question is, how did you, when you took that giant step, how was it preparing for it?
So before we went to a lender, we literally went to the different construction sites. And that's how I put together my construction team. And many of my subcontractors were actually starting out on their own. They had been working for someone else. And my mason, who does my brick and stonework, my painter, my concrete guy, my flooring guy, those guys were getting started on their own. And so we kind of, I guess, grown up together, so to speak. But anyhow, I put together this team before I actually went to a lender. So I had the money required to secure a loan. I had all of that. I just had to find a lender that would say, okay, we're willing to finance your project.
Do you think being a female, being a woman, had some issues with you trying to get a lender? I mean, when you walk through the door, here's this beautiful petite woman. And I'm sure, you know, when they looked at you, they were like, construction? Building homes? Really? What was that like?
So, and I believe, yes, I believe they were hesitant. Because then I'm sure they wouldn't admit to it, but I'm sure that that has something to do with it as well. And it was on the one hand, it was discouraging because my counterparts were actually getting financed, and there were many other builders that were just getting started. As I was getting started. And so they were receiving the financial backing that they needed. But as I said, I went to several before I found someone who said, okay. And the reason I persevered was I literally felt in my heart that this is part of what God had for me to do. And I thought, okay, if this is what part of what God has for me to do, then he has a way for me to get it done. I just have to keep pushing until I find that right person who's willing to finance my project.
And as you know, it always, that first piece is always the hardest, but once you get through the door, you know, it's like that old saying, you have arrived. So now your company has been formed, and if you could go ahead and give a plug.
To EJ Homes, and I operate under an LLC, which is Esther's Enterprises LLC, DBA EJ Homes.
Okay, so our listeners will know where to go. Now, I was taking questions because there were several women that were very, very excited at the fact that I was going to have a female contractor on the show. And some wanted to know, do you only build homes in the state of Texas, or do you just go anywhere if the opportunities themselves?
Exactly. And I'm willing to go if the opportunities, Tony and I have talked about this. I have so many dreams about, since I began building, I've evolved into my big desire is that people would have decent homes to live in. They don't have to be mansions. They don't have to be fancy, but that they would have a decent home. And so that's part of what's been driving me. And that's still something that I feel driven to do. And I don't know how that's going to work out. But again, I just believe, and if you show God action, I believe he'll do his part. And so that's what I'm working on right now.
So I noticed on your card, it says a woman's touch. And, you know, it got me to thinking, when I look at my home, my woman's touch did not come until this building was erected. And then I came in and had to, you know, tweak a little bit here, tweak a little bit there. Tell our audience, what is a woman's touch when it comes to doing construction, and how it's different?
Well, literally from the start, one of the things I knew, and again, you'll hear me mention oftentimes Tony, my husband, because he played a really important role. He was my business partner. And so he knew so much more about the business aspect of everything than I did. So that's also gave me the confidence to step into the unknown. But one of the things we also agreed was that I was going to have to set myself apart, because I was stepping into a male dominated, people that don't look like me world. And so to really be taken seriously, I couldn't build what the average home looked like. And so, so literally when I build a project, and I still do this, I've been building now for almost 13 years, will be 13 years in January. But from the start, I began when we're at a phase where my electrician, my HVAC, who does my AC and heat, my trim carpenter, my cabinet person, my flooring. I literally walk with all of those different people. Because while the blueprint is just your guideline, it doesn't mean you have to follow it exactly.
And I agree with you. I wish I had known that when I had my home built. Because I got to tell you, one of the bedrooms wasn't going to have a closet. The office area that's my office area now was an original bedroom, but they forgot the closet doors. So from a customer perspective, that is so valuable to have a contractor who is going to put that personal touch to the project.
And you're right. And that's what the woman's touch is, because I literally walk with those different subcontractors, because sometimes you look at the blueprint, but then once the house is at a certain phase, you realize, okay, well, let's do this, not that. Or you realize there are some things that you can do that the plans don't actually show. And then I'm always trying to figure out, how do we make this more comfortable? And so with the spec homes that I told you about, and even with my custom clients as well, I want to build the home in such a way that it makes it comfortable for their living, but also practical. And so that's what I'm always trying to achieve when I'm building a home. I want it to be comfortable.
Now, one thing, I did a little research and it got me to thinking, since I injured my knee, I thought about building for my senior citizenship, if you will, as I got older, building for the adult that is getting older, that may need a little bit less steeper steps or just that ranch level. Have mm-hmm. you been given the opportunity to incorporate that into your building?
So I have of sorts. I actually, one of the spec homes that I built, the buyer was a veteran. And so he was wheelchair bound. And one of the things we had to go back and do was do an ADA threshold.
And for our customers, what is an ADA threshold?
And I just went blank with what ADA means.
Okay, because I did put you on the spot.
No. And I just use that term. But you're just being compliant with people with different handicaps or challenges.
The American Disabilities Association.
Yes, that's okay. What it is. Yes, okay. That's what it is. Yes.
I should know this. I'm a vet. I should know.
but anyhow, so with that being said, but now one of the things that I do try to encourage my clients is when they're having their plans drawn, that they take into consideration that, as you said, you know, they may be at the early stages of their life. They may be in the midpoints of their lives, and some of them are actually in their retirement stages. But I really encourage them to build their doorways that, if in the eventuality they need a wheelchair or some other form of mobility, that they're able to use it in their homes.
I think that's wonderful, because, you know, we don't think about those things. When we first buy our homes, we're younger.
And yes.
We may have younger children. But then mm-hmm. when I look at it, I'm saying to myself, my house today, as built, is not functional for me as I get older. And I often look at the floor plan and say, where can we stick an elevator to get us from the third floor down to the basement and back up? But you don't think about those things when you initially have your house built. And that's unfortunate.
And you're right. And that's why I also encourage, because sometimes I meet prospective clients that tell me, hey, we're not ready to build. It's going to be 2 or 3 years before we're ready. And I encourage them, we're very good. It's good that you're thinking about it, but I encourage them to start planning. And I would advise them to grab a notebook and a pen or paper and start writing down the things that are important to you. But also, as we just talked about, how it's going to be in the eventuality that you find yourself needing some kind of mobility assistance, that your home accommodates that. And I will say that was one of the things that Tony and I did when we co-built our home. We made sure that all of our doorways are 3 feet wide. And many homes that you go in, because I'm a builder, these are the things that I notice all the time. But most doorways aren't 3 feet wide.
No, they're not. I'm looking at mine now and going, oh my God, we're in trouble.
Yeah. Now, generally your exterior door will probably be 3 feet.
But those interior doors are not.
Exactly.
And it's the same thing with the toilets. So when I first moved into this home, exactly, I don't have the same toilets as when this home was first built. I had to go out and get the ADA compliant toilets, the ones that are a little bit taller.
Right.
Because we're older now. And, you know, it's just interesting how you make the transition. So you encourage people to sit down and actually plan out, you know, if you're going to be in this home for 10 years or, you know, depending upon your age, these are some of the things you might need to look at. Can we kind of shift gears just a little bit and let's talk about that financing piece. What, from a new buyer's perspective, what would you, I haven't bought a home yet, but I'm looking, what would you suggest that they start doing to prep themselves for that from a financial perspective?
Right. So one would be to actually sit down with the lender so they can have some form of idea of what they actually qualify for. And then also to determine what they want to spend. Because here's the thing, and I know you already know this, but many people may not, is that what a lender is willing to loan you may not be what you want to finance.
And that's true. That is, oh my God, that is so true.
Right. So a lender might say, hey, we'll loan you $500,000. You may say, I only want to spend $250,000. I don't want to spend that much money. And so that's the thing to know, is to really find out what you qualify for and then determine what amount of money you want to spend. And there are three main, I'm glad you mentioned that, because there are three main components that determine the cost of your home. And one is going to be the size of your home, the amenities of your home, and then the amount of the project. And so what I always tell people is that they determine the two most important ones, but those two dictate the third. So, for instance, if you told me you want to spend $300,000 and you want the home to be 2,500 square feet, then those two determinations would determine the third one. Now, that's going to determine what kind of amenities, what level of amenities you have in your home. And sometimes when I tell people this, oftentimes they'll say, oh, okay, but then they'll come back and try to dictate all three. And one thing I want them to understand is, unless your budget is that free, that you don't get to determine all three, that the two most important ones would dictate the third.
That's a good reality. I think my daughter had to learn that when she had a home built, because she wanted what she saw on television on the do-it-yourself channels. And I'm like, sweetheart, that's not reality. So what she ended up doing is getting some of the middle grade stuff and not the high grade stuff. And as time progressed, she went in and started changing things. But you brought something to mind that we don't generally think of when it comes to a lender. And I would like to liken a lender to me going shopping for anything, a dress, a car, an outfit. You go out there and you talk to them. Mm-hmm. You don't necessarily have to be ready to purchase, but you're readying yourself to educate. We don't do that. I will say this, that we don't look at it. When I say we, I know when I bought my home, I didn't look at it from that perspective. And when I get ready to go buy the last home, hopefully in the next couple of years or so, I'm going to go shopping. I'm going to invest in looking at and educating myself on what that lender can do for me. And as you said, one of the three, because you're not going to get all of it, what becomes most important to me.
Exactly. And you just made a good point with your daughter. And that's one of the things when someone is telling me, hey, this is what's important to me. And I try to find a happy median. And so you just made a point with your daughter. Things that you can go back and upgrade later, do that. If electrical fixtures, plumbing fixtures, those are things that you can go back and upgrade later. The structure, I tell people when I build a home, sometimes I build a very modest home, and some of my homes have been very luxurious homes. But one of the things I never, ever compromise on would be the structure of your home. So the other things you can go back and upgrade later. The structure, not so much. And so the things that you can upgrade at a later date, flooring. There are so many other things that you can go back when you're maybe financially in a better shape or in a better place. Go back and upgrade those things.
Yeah, everybody wants that posh, stage-ready type home. Yes. And, you know, sometimes it takes years to get to that point.
Exactly.
And you have to be conscious of that. So that was the financial perspective of it. Now I want to dive in and explore the different associations that builders have to belong to. I know here in the area where I live, they have what's called a builders association. And until I met you, I never realized how important the Builders Association is. Can you enlighten our listeners on what the Building Association is and the importance of it?
Okay. And the reason I joined our local association, which is I live outside a town called Tyler, Texas. And so our Builders Association is located in Tyler. And I initially did not join the association, but one of my motivating factors was a lot of people put validity into certain places. And the association was one that I was finding that people, it gave them confidence in a builder to be associated with the association. And then I also joined the Better Business Bureau as well. But as far as the association, it gives you contact with lots of vendors. Many times, as a matter of fact, I just called the head of our association in Tyler. I was looking for an inspector, and I had been talking with different builders and hadn't been able to find an inspector. And so finally I thought, let me just call Libby, and contacted her, and she sent two different names, and I called one. And so it gives you resources, I guess you could say. And then, as I said, I think it gives you validity. And then it also gives you a membership to our national association, which is actually located in Washington, D.C. And so because we're a member of both associations, we receive a monthly magazine, which just kind of shows you what's going on across the country, actually, building-wise. But also what our association does from a political standpoint is we literally go to Austin, which is our capital, once a year, and it's called Rally Day. And we literally go down there and meet with our different representatives, senators, and we tell them that these bills are coming up. And they're not favorable to our industry. And so we want you to vote either for or against, however, what we're needing them to do. And so that is one of probably the most important roles that our association plays.
That is awesome to hear. You know, as I said earlier, a lot of people don't really look at that. And that is a tool to be used. I know that there they have conferences every year, and I know at some of those conferences they have training classes and workshops and things of that nature.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
How do you see the building industry moving for women in terms of women entrepreneurs? How do you see it moving in the future?
Oh, well, since I've been building, because when I started, as far as I knew, I was the only female builder.
In your area?
In our area, yes.
Oh, my gosh.
And now, probably the last 3 to 4 years, I think probably now there may be 4, 5, or 6 more female builders.
I mean, that's not a lot when I look at the quantity of builders, home builders that are out there.
Right. And you're right. And it's not a lot, but I think it's definitely making headway. Well, it's not a lot. And keep in mind, it's a big responsibility. Not to say women can't handle the responsibility, but I think to actually maybe leave the job that maybe a woman already has, I'm not sure if they're wanting to do that and go with something different. But what really helped me also to get started was I had a husband with a job, right? So it gave me the opportunity to build up my business. Because oftentimes in the beginning, your business is not really making the money that you need it to make. And so depending on, I guess, where a woman is in her life and in her career, maybe that's what's taken, I guess, maybe longer for women to actually see the opportunities. Because I think the very thing that was a negative for me in the beginning is actually a positive for me now.
What was that?
The fact that I was a female.
Okay.
Yeah, I think so.
And really?
People are fascinated because, as you just said, people are fascinated. And one of the things that I found in the beginning, people didn't take me seriously. When I would meet someone and they would ask, they would see me at the job site and they would ask, oh, are you the realtor? And I would say, no, I'm the building contractor. And then they would say, okay. And then maybe we have 2 or 3 more sentences between us. But then they would come back and say, oh, so you're the realtor. And say, no, I'm the building contractor. And so people really couldn't wrap their minds around the fact that I was the building contractor.
You know, it makes you think, what in their mind's eye do they visualize as the building contractor? I mean, obviously
someone
male.
Didn't look like me,
obviously. Yeah, obviously right. Male. And here you are, and they're like, oh my goodness, she's building the house. Yes.
Yes,
she is
exactly.
Building the home.
And then the name of my company is EJ Homes, so they assumed that E was for a man. They never thought that E was for Esther. And so many times they just made the assumption that there was a man building. And if my husband was there, they would assume that he was the builder. Although I had just told them that I was the builder.
Yeah, kind of hard for them to believe. But
exactly.
You know what? That's one that speaks volumes, because what that says is, yes, the quality of work is so good that you've been ingrained to think that a male did this.
Right.
When in actuality, it was a mm-hmm. female who did it. And I am excited and applauding you. If you had to give pearls of wisdom to that young woman who is going to school and thinking about this as a career, what would you tell her?
I would tell her to go for it. It's an exciting industry. As I said, what I'm always trying to do is, how can I make this home better? Okay, yes, I'm dealing with probably 4 walls, but how can I put a different touch to this particular home? Because I never want my homes to feel as though they're cookie cutters. So what I would tell her, I think the industry, I think this is a good place to be for a woman. Again, because you're talking about an industry where you can really shine as that female builder. I think there are great opportunities for women to set themselves apart. And what women oftentimes do, we're good listeners. And so you listen to what your client wants. And again, I'm always thinking of how can I do it better, making suggestions. And I have to tell you, Angela, most of my business has been word of mouth.
Oh, that's awesome. That speaks volumes to the quality that you produce for your customers.
And I read actually an article from the BBB, the Better Business Bureau, and they literally said that, I forget, it was a large percentage, but a large percentage of business would be from word of mouth. Even though there's so much advertising being done, and we see it all the time, that the majority of your business will be from word of mouth.
And also for you, when that owner, that new owner, has that party or that event at their home, and people come in and they look at the craftsmanship of the home, that speaks volumes as well. And that's like advertising.
And it is. And that's part of that. And you're right. And that is from the advertising, because literally I'm building right now all custom homes because that particular client saw another client's home and another and another, and it's just evolved into where right now everything that I have are customs. And so it's that advertisement that you know, they're there in the neighborhood, or they have a friend who's looking to have a home built, or they have a neighbor who's looking to have a home built. So that's how it's grown for me.
Oh, wow. That is amazing. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we want to thank you for joining us at the Substance of Life podcast. I hope today's episode gave you a different flavor of home building. And if you are in the market for getting a home built, custom or otherwise, I am going to suggest that you look up EJ Homes. Their website will be at the bottom of the podcast about our guest. Thank you, and have an awesome day. Esther, thank you for being with us.
Angela, thank you so much.
A little bit.
Okay.